Welcome to SaaS on the Streets, episode 1. This is the chance for SaaS leaders. These are people who are creating software as a service businesses, the ones that you pay monthly to use the software in the cloud. It's a chance for these people to hit me up with all their questions. Right now, most of the world is in lockdown, and this piece of nostalgia was recorded when I was free to roam the streets. If you're in lockdown listening to this, you'll know straight away that this is from a world away. So in episode 1, we go pretty deep. There's a few, just 3 questions mainly, and it takes about a half an hour. So we go deep into the businesses in question to deliver some value for people. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome to Queenstown, New Zealand. We are live here on SaaS on the Street. I've been around the block a few times in the SaaS world, software as a service, and I'm here to talk to some local SaaS entrepreneurs, some fantastic guys, and they can just ask me any questions that they want. So this is episode 1 of SaaS on the Streets. And there they are over there. There's one there. He's lurking. Rich, did you want to ask me something?
I would love to ask you something. Do we know each other or are we pulled up to
it? It's carefully choreographed, isn't it? So how's your day been?
It's been a good day. It's been a good day for a Monday.
Good.
Yeah, I've enjoyed myself.
And you got something you want to
ask? So I'm wondering, like, if you were a guy that was set the task of selling software to bars and restaurants.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, Simon, in the next 12 months, I'm going to give you $30,000 to market it, sell it, do whatever you could to sell to as many bars or restaurants. But you didn't have much budget, so $2,500 a month, $30,000 in a year. Like, what would you do?
So just for those who are watching, you're selling a point of sale solution, right?
Not point of sale, but all the back of house stuff that a bar and restaurant does to run their business.
That connects into point of sale.
Correct. Yeah.
So that they can get more intelligence about what's going on.
Yeah. They can manage their labor costs better.
Yeah.
Their stock better. Everything. They'll end up making more money if they do it right.
Who do you want to get? Do you want to get the big guys or the little guys?
You kind of want the sweet spot's really the in-between. It's the guys that have got like 5 to 10 sites.
Right.
So, I guess at the top end, that's quite a big hospitality company, but there's a lot of groups around the country and the world that own 4 or 5 hospitality sites.
And where do they, you're in New Zealand, you're kind of working on Australia, but you're also working on Europe, is that right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So where do you want to crack the most?
Like I would say, in relation to this question, like if we had to do it in Australia, like that would be where I'd be interested.
And what have you tried in Australia?
We were very early days, so we haven't tried much yet at all, other than going and taking initial meetings with some groups that sort of fit that criteria to see current software that they're using, because we kind of have to live in a world with other software packages. So they've got other finance packages, other payroll, other point of sale. So we've just really been learning about that a lot. And you know, we're finding it's pretty similar to the New Zealand market. There's some differences in that we need to integrate with a few other time and attendance rostering systems in Australia that we don't have to in New Zealand, but otherwise everything's fairly similar. But we, in terms of actually going out and selling to the market, we're really at ground zero.
Okay, and what works in the sales process for you to get? Are you getting inbounds in New Zealand?
We get inbounds via, there's a few hospitality training and consulting businesses that go quite wide across the industry that do a lot of events. So they sing Loaded's praises because a lot of their customers use it and they've seen it work for a lot of their customers, plus it makes it easier for them to do their jobs of helping people. And we're also quite hooked into the associations in New Zealand, so that gives us credibility and access to their members. But it's been a fairly organic process in New Zealand,
yeah,
because it's happened over a long period of time, and we also knew the industry really well. So,
yeah,
there's been a lot of organic growth here.
So, if you found the number one or the top three of those hospitality training groups in Australia,
yeah,
do they get a referral fee?
Yeah, they go onto it, a commission based.
And they're actually referral. That's sort of working really well. Like in terms of once they get their head around it and they get some people on it and they go, oh, this is actually good for the customers, good for us.
Yeah. I think that more than the revenue earn is this makes it a whole lot easier for them to do their job because they're able to benchmark where their customer's at when they start working with them.
Right.
And then over a period of time, easily monitor their improvements as opposed to having to ask them for information all the time.
Do they pay anything? Like if they get a customer.
Yeah.
And they get loaded on there. They get do you give them an annual clip of the ticket, or you give them an annual clip of the ticket?
Ongoing. Yeah.
And they find it easy to do their job.
Yeah, correct.
But they're not paying anything too loaded. They don't get any extra tools or anything.
No.
Okay.
Just access to their customers, so long as their customer provides it to them, obviously.
Yeah, I just go hard with all of those hospitality trainers.
Yeah.
In Australia.
Yeah. So they're not an easy breed to. It's not like I'm an accountant and I stick
an
accountant sticker on the wall. Yeah, I guess they're quite hard to sort of track down, and also it's quite hard to get a gauge of just how much they're out there doing in the industry.
Yeah.
So
you haven't got any kind of index where you go, oh yeah, there's the top. You don't even know who they are.
Exactly. There's not a top four like there is in the accounting world.
Are they hanging around on LinkedIn?
Some of them are, yeah. Some of them are on LinkedIn and contactable.
Yeah. So there's a really good strategy on LinkedIn where you figure out what your catchment is, so those hospitality trainers in Australia,
mm-hmm.
and you have someone else manage your account and start reaching out to them, and you figure out three or four touch points like, hi, thought it'd be worth connecting, see if there's a win-win. They come back, oh yeah, pleased to meet you, how's life? And then the person scripts back, oh, really good. Like, wondering about whether you'd be interested in a conversation sometime in the next couple of weeks. Yeah, sure. Boom, boom, boom. Okay, boom. And then you've got a call in your diary that you haven't had to fish for.
Right.
And that's a really effective use of your dollars because you're paying someone, the person I've used is in the Philippines.
Okay.
Really good English. You can trust them to manage your LinkedIn.
Yeah.
They're actually in your account.
Yeah, sure.
And then, it's that three or four touches because no one wants, hi, I'm Richard from Loaded Reports. Would you like to connect with me? No one wants that. I actually do connects with no message at all.
Sure.
Why put a message in? You're just going to turn people off.
Yeah.
So just connect and they'll see, oh, Rich McLeod, CEO, Loaded Reports, and make your headline of what you do. You know, we save bars. I was going to look at your LinkedIn profile. Hang on, I'll try that.
Are we friends on LinkedIn?
I don't know if we're friends.
I don't know if I accepted you because you didn't put a message in.
I don't know. Second, we're not even connected.
We are, aren't we?
Okay, I'll connect with you. Pending. Okay, CEO at Loaded. Looks like you're a drug runner. So Loaded Reports. So if I go into you, so I would rewrite this. so that I would rewrite this from an Australian hospitality owner's perspective.
Okay.
So they, you'd almost just try it out. We're going, you know, we help hospitality trainers.
Yeah.
Loaded reports, we help hospitality trainers be more effective with their clients or something like that.
Right.
Get the proposition in their world.
Right.
On your LinkedIn profile.
Speak directly to them.
Something like that.
Okay.
And then you start this 1, 2, 3, 4, get meetings in the diary. And then you have quite a good slide deck that's all about the case study from the New Zealand guys. And they'll just be falling over themselves to sign up.
Yeah, gotcha.
And then if you want to go next step, so spend some money on that presentation.
Yeah.
Because the more powerful that presentation is, the easier you're going to be able to get someone in Australia across the line without having to fly over there.
Yeah, sure.
And that presentation starts with like the first couple of slides are just sort of just shifting their world, like, you know, something's changed. We've totally changed hospitality, and here's how we've done it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is from the trainer's perspective, and this is from the bar's perspective.
Yeah.
And yeah, we come from bars.
Yeah.
3.9 million coming through Queenstown a year. So this is what we've solved. This is the problem we've solved, and this is why it's relevant for you. And position them as the kind of the, like, have you got any stats about where hospitality is going, or the kind of the lack of clarity at an owner level or at a supplier level?
I mean, we've got
sort of stuff in there.
Because it's really simply about efficiencies and profitability, right? We've got a lot of good case study data around.
Yeah.
You were here, you implemented, you ended up here.
Yeah.
And they're good stories because people have ended up a lot better off.
But you almost want this thing to be a program that they apply for.
Right.
And then they've got to, you know, so you're getting them really, really excited.
Yeah.
And then you're saying, you know, it's obviously not for everybody, but if you're accepted, this is what you'll end up getting by way of a referral.
Yeah.
And then you need to spell out what a software as a service recurring revenue license fee means, because
yeah,
people don't get it.
Gotcha.
So then you have to train them
yeah
into going, oh my God, I've got potentially a 30-year trail on
yeah
this.
Yeah.
You know, and what that can add up to over 30 years cumulatively, if everything goes well, if they roll it around their different all their different bars.
Sure, sure.
And then you could,
that they're already working with.
Yeah.
Which is what is happening in the really good cases in New Zealand.
Yeah.
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 So you don't need to go into specifics of the ones that are doing well.
Yeah.
But you do need to say, you know, and that's also a good way of going, like if you get, at the end of your thing, get up a Google sheet that's all beautifully formatted and it says, number of bars, what do you do, monthly turnover?
Yep.
Do you do cost of goods sold?
Correct, labor cost.
Yeah, so yeah, if someone knew their stuff, they'd just go, oh, this, but the trainer, you go number of clients,
yeah,
average number of bars, average revenue per month, average cost of goods sold.
Gotcha.
And just yeah say, okay, just give me that.
Yeah.
And then the formulas all spit it out.
Yeah.
And then you go, well, look, if you've got all of them on, I said, just yeah give me your whole, give me all the people you've worked with in the last year.
Yeah.
Let's just put them in here.
Yeah.
Nothing's fixed, but I just want to give you a calculation and what loaded can mean to you.
Yeah.
And then you do the calculation and go, you'd be loaded, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So
that's right.
I'm sure you've done
it's
that one before. But that calculation before their eyes, at the end of the presentation, and then you go into, and then back to the presentation, and there's a referral program.
Gotcha.
They're going, shit, these guys have changed the game. Here's my, here's a calculation he's done on what my clients are doing and what I can get out of loaded. And shit, I'm not even in the thing. I have to apply. Okay, what do I have to do to apply? And then you have to figure out how rigid or flexible you make that.
Yeah.
what sort of information. But the good thing about it is you can qualify them. I mean, the reason you make the application is that you're saying we only want you if you're a certain size, which is what you said at the beginning. Sure. You want that mid-tier guys.
Yeah, you don't want to be investing a whole lot of time and effort into someone that's produced two or three customers.
Yeah, so you've got to ask for the proof of that.
Yeah.
However you're going to do that.
Yeah, sure.
And then also assure them on the confidentiality that you're not going to go out going to their clients directly.
Yeah, understood.
So is that helpful?
It's very helpful.
Final thing, is there a way you can refer a hospitality trainer, can refer another hospitality trainer?
Well, there's not currently.
But like if you've got someone in Brisbane and they know someone in Melbourne and they go, Rich, I want you to go see something in Melbourne.
Right.
Is there some program that you can have for that?
Right.
Could just be $1,500
successful onboard of a new hospitality trainer.
No, I would just say whatever amount.
Yeah.
But it's enough that it makes them get it done in their busy day.
Sure.
But let's say it's 1,500 Aussie.
Yeah.
That's plenty of 4X.
Yeah.
And it would be something like, because you think about it, if they've signed up, so you're onboarding them, so they're qualified, they're probably not going to introduce you to someone not so good. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's after they're up and going, and you've had your first review with them after the first client that they've onboarded, and they're all kind of like about to give you a great endorsement. And say, look, if you want to give me any names, if they qualify and if they accept it into the program, I'll give you $1,500.
Yeah.
And so it's just a straight, like, that's them and them endorsing you to their friend is worth a whole lot of money.
Yeah.
So again, that's where you spend your marketing budget. LinkedIn, the presentations and the
motivating.
And the referral.
Incentivizing.
Yeah.
The existing.
Yeah.
The first ones you hear.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I didn't expect us to go there, so I think that's good.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm interested how you think you best arrive at the price you charge for a software product.
I think you've got to figure out if you're at the premium end or at the affordable end. And then you're basically charging what you can. So
other than trial and error, how do you think you best to go about?
Well, what's an example of how you've priced? Have you changed your pricing? Or are you thinking about changing your pricing?
We've increased our prices very slowly over a long period of time.
Yeah. As you got more traction and more confidence.
Yeah. We were confident in the value customers were getting. But we've just charged a one price for all. We haven't modularized and broken down features or looked at the business types or various volumes, just purely because we haven't had the resource to undertake that analysis or the development required to.
But haven't you got a massive gain that you're giving every customer?
Every customer that implements Loaded Well, we certainly do, yeah.
What's that, roughly?
We estimate it to be around 3% improvements in their cost of goods and labour. So if you're $1 million a year business, then you're saving about $30,000.
Yeah. And what would that company be paying Loaded?
They'd be paying us $1,090 at the moment.
Well, you kind of answer your own question, really, haven't you? Because it's not just that quantifiable difference, it's everything else, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, you're kind of putting in a platform that the whole business benefits from.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a training and component that needs to go with that we don't necessarily have the resource to deliver en masse. But possibly why we haven't done that as well is because to our prices we haven't figured out a way to present that to a customer, I guess, in terms of this is what you would charge us, we would charge you, and then this is how we would how you would save the money over a period of time, and then gone out and done that, I guess.
So is this, is the training stuff that you can add in and they'll pay more for? Or you, you, but you're not quite geared up to resource that?
Yeah, a little bit of that, yeah.
So you're selling it in and you're going, oh, if I had someone that go in there and do like a week's worth with them, that would be time well spent.
Check in with these guys every week for the next 6 months or every fortnight.
So have you not really got that kind of customer service management, customer success management?
Not in a significant way, no.
Yeah. I think you probably...
But we certainly would if we could charge for it.
Yeah.
We just haven't... I think we haven't done it because we haven't figured out how to charge for it.
So you've got to work out from the customer value perspective, the pricing, and then have enough in the price that you can pay your salespeople like 30% of the first year, and they're going to, at the rate the business is going, they're going to accelerate the business and make a ton of money. And then you need a good package for your account managers, and the cross-selling is that the salesperson has to sell in the account management package so that they can see the value of what they're going to get from training and implementation, or these different modules that you're going to train them in. Mm. You know, to sell modules, yeah. Training. Get people accredited.
Yeah.
When we did Diligent, we had company secretaries from big companies putting on their LinkedIn profile that they're accredited for Diligent. Mm. So be accredited for Loaded. Mm. And that's there, and Xero's great at this because they gamify the whole expert.
There's a lot of development work in the level they take it to, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it can't be a human training.
Yeah, just
accrediting them for
and
now.
You're billing, yeah. But you're billing them, yeah. And you're giving them a certificate,
yeah.
And then they can put it in their office,
yeah.
And then they can put it on their LinkedIn profile. Mm. So, it's the sales selling in the account management service, and courses,
yeah.
And that way, you've got revenue from those courses or those modules,
yeah.
That you're training people in. You can start to do it online or you do it in person,
yeah.
And it becomes part of the whole Loaded school of thinking.
And from the customer's point of view, it's how they end up actually running a successful business as well.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then you have endorsements for the training modules or endorsements for the training package, and you say, you know, if you. We know that you're going to be so much more successful. So you have to make a choice. Once you get that thing developed with the training and implementation, you have a choice of whether you make it optional or you make it compulsory. So if you make it compulsory, it's bundled into the price and you just got to pay it.
Mm.
And that's actually the better way to build a SaaS business, because some people, like we'd have people saying, oh, we don't, why do we need anyone to train our directors when the systems, you've just told us how easy it is to use. It's the easiest one to use in the world. Why do we have to take training? And you go, well, because if one director can't log in from their hotel or doesn't have their password and can't get in before one board meeting, they're going to throw their toys out of the pram and the meeting's going to be a failure and they're going to want to ditch it and go back to paper. So it's the same sort of ethos. If you go, well, for this to work, this has to happen, this has to happen, this has to happen, this has to happen.
Yeah.
But why is it so expensive? Well, because this is what works. It's the best in the world.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to be part of it, go find someone else.
Yeah.
That's a more ballsy way to do it. And that's what I say with your pricing. You're either premium or you're the everyman product.
Yeah.
And I think you're better to be at premium.
Yeah.
And you're better to keep jumping up your... jumping up your fees so that you represent that and pack more in behind it.
Yeah.
And then you can pay for all your extra staff.
Yeah.
Because as it scales, you're going to need a ton of extra staff.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, it's certainly a lot more hockey stick shaped if the price is low and you're trying to grow quickly, right?
Because
you're having to invest up front in the staff and the revenue comes over the lifetime of the...
Yeah.
Subscription as opposed to
getting
a good big chunk of it up front.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Good. Thanks, Si.
No worries.
On the street, Simon Small.
Is that good?
It's good. It's good.
All right. Send in the wolf.
Where's the wolf?
No, I'm hiding.
Oh, the wolf is hiding. Send in the wolf.
What's the difference between SaaS and having a gardener on contract to come in and do my lawns? I pay a monthly subscription, essentially, for this gardener. I don't organize the time, the date.
Okay.
I don't deal with it. I just pay money, and they come, and they do the...
The big difference is that if you get the SaaS model right, you are bundling a whole lot of stuff together that's perceived as a huge benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the... Hopefully you've taken a problem and solved it magnificently, like people having to sign up for a bungee jump or having to sign up for an adventure event, and mm-hmm. you've made an electronic waiver, right? Mm-hmm. Or something like that on an iPad that you learn from doing bar crawls mm-hmm. and having to manage people. So I was listening to Ben the other day. So you've made something easier, and out of that ease comes a better way of doing things. Mm-hmm. So that really goes hand in hand with the SaaS model.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about the advantage of all of that that keeps you, so it's a trade-off, because instead of, really when you think about the old style, it used to be only big companies getting sort of bespoke software and, mm-hmm. and having to pay for that version, having to pay, you know, millions or hundreds of thousands of dollars,
mm-hmm.
and then that version would last a few years, and then they'd bring out another version you have to pay. So it was about flattening that line and decreasing that investment.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, you're paying a lot over a lifetime, over 10 years. Hopefully it'll last more than 10 years. But in other ways, you can get out
mm-hmm.
fairly easily. And all of the things, like the way it's set up and the way that you support people, should be wrapped around that SaaS proposition, so that people feel like they can get help anytime, and therefore they're paying a premium for that peace of mind, and they're also paying a premium for the fact that it's not going to fall over,
mm-hmm.
and that if a new device comes out, you'll be on it without them having to pay for an extra bit for that module. So there's that kind of continuity of care
mm-hmm.
that you're constantly investing in. So SaaS companies, as they scale, also have to hire a huge amount of people, and they have to invest in a huge amount, because you need all the bases to be kind of covered.
You touched on something that I really like, is the continuity of care and the expectation of care. I remember years ago I had a Adobe Photoshop 9 or something, and there was a glitch bug that it didn't work for me. And I contacted Adobe support, and they sort of looked at me and said, well, we've got your money, so we'll fix it in 10.
Yeah.
And it didn't get fixed.
Yeah. And did you have to pay for 10?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic.
You know? I mean, Adobe, Microsoft, just this
whereas now,
old way of fleecing people. Yeah,
if we don't like it, we stop paying for it right there.
Yeah.
And they haven't gotten $1,000 out of me. They got 1 month of $100 and tough.
Yeah. Well, so my battle with Microsoft Office over the years, I've bought it so many times, mm-hmm. and the last time I bought it was about 10 years ago, but recently I'm on a new MacBook. I haven't been able to kind of get the new version over to the old one, because mm-hmm. it's still a CD-based license.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, now they want me to pay for Office 365
mm-hmm.
to be able to open up a Word document
mm-hmm.
and do something. And then Google have released... you can open a Word document into Google Docs mm-hmm. and save it back as a Word doc. Mm-hmm. It's a total
mm-hmm.
up yours to Microsoft. Mm-hmm. Finally.
Finally.
Yeah.
The three E's of Microsoft: embrace, extend, and extinguish.
Right.
That initially they'd embrace existing formats.
Right.
They'd then extend that Word can now do what WordPerfect couldn't.
Right.
You know? So we all come over the Word bandwagon.
Right.
And then they extinguish. Do you know any other word processing tools apart from Microsoft Word?
Google Docs. Yeah. So was the question about the kind of Adobe in the Harvey Norman about that kind of one-time purchase and the difference between that and the ongoing
the SaaS. Continual care, the continual accountability of product almost.
Yeah.
The expectation that the product will improve, the product will get new features.
Yeah.
I almost feel a little bit let down these days if an update comes out and it doesn't have something new.
Yeah.
There is an expectation now that if my phone has to reboot because there's a software update, I want it to come back better.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
Something about that.
So, because you buy a lot of software because you're technically inclined, it's quite different from the universe that a lot of people inhabit who are like buying your service, online waivers and associated stuff, because they're really in the they're kind of in the consumer and the business buying software to help run their business smoother. So what do you see as someone who's just buying a lot of software that helps you develop and helps you actually build a SaaS company? What do you see has been going on?
I buy software because the purchasing with money is cheaper than solving the problem with labor.
Right.
My clients have an existing problem of guests come in, these waivers need to be filled, they need to be filed, they need to be archived and securely shredded at the end.
Yeah.
That costs labor hours.
Yeah.
And if that costs, let's say, $100 of labor hours a month, and my product comes in at $80 a month, it's a no-brainer to buy my product.
Yeah.
I find that with whether it's a CRM for our sales guys to use, we pay for a CRM that has pretty features that most of which could be done on a spreadsheet. Most of them could be done with post-it notes and a whiteboard. But we pay for the ease of use and that it's cheaper to pay for it than to do it ourselves.
What CRM are you using?
Close.io.
Okay, yeah. I don't know that.
Apparently it works. They're happy with it. And they can customize it enough. And that's the big one, is the customize, the adaptability, rather than the manual labor process. The spreadsheet, the whiteboard, the post-it, the doing everything via email.
Is your decision process to buy some software sometimes incredibly short? Like you just go...
If it makes our life easier, yes.
Yeah, it's just like, get the car now, buy it.
If buying, what did we find the other day? It was some stupid Adobe plugin that, that does a really good job of clear cutting. So people get cut out from backgrounds, yeah?
Yeah.
It's stupidly easy. It's an online SaaS service. It's like $10, $15 a month.
Right.
Yep. And it's like, cool, I can put two photos through there, and those two photos would have cost me more than $15 of labor.
Right. You know? And I've got it for X amount of years or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. Or per month, $15.
Per month. Right.
I do more than two photos a month of clear cutting, of cutting out the background.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I mean, what would you do? Would you do it manually, the slow way, and cost you 5 hours? Five hours that you could have been doing something else?
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. And you think that's also something that your customers are starting to do? Just like, that, no-brainer, buy it.
They see us as the easy way out.
Yeah.
It's money that has to be spent either in wages, or they spend less money with us and get a better product.
Yeah. Cool. Any other questions?
Yeah, I'm good.
Thank you.
Was that all? Thank you, sir. No hand. What do we do?
Elbow.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
elbow and a foot shake.
Yeah. No. But the kitchen chefs all touch elbows.
No, it's a thing. The elbow and the foot is the hygienic way to do it. Yeah.
Okay,
that's it for SaaS on the Streets, Queenstown Episode 1. If you want this in your city, let me know in the comments below or what you liked or didn't like, especially if you didn't like Wolf. Thank you. We are
awesome.
What a great way to start SaaS on the Street. Thanks for listening to episode one. Great questions from both Rich and Wolf. I certainly didn't expect to be asked about the difference between SaaS and hiring a gardener. Now, due to lockdowns, episode two will be SaaS on the Screen. Stay tuned for more great interactions.